First case this morning is Eagle Cove Camp versus Town of Woodboro. Mr. Storzer?
That's correct. Good morning. May it please the Court. I would like to spend my time today focusing on three of the major issues presented in this appeal: the plaintiff's substantial burdens, equal terms and exclusions claims. And I'd like to start with what I believe is the simplest issue, and that is the equal terms claim here. The Eagle Cove argues that the vast array of uses that are permitted at the zoning districts, in the zoning districts at issue, would have similar effects to the prohibited use, in this case, a Bible camp, which falls within the county's definition of a recreational camp. The court below held that the appropriate test to use was to determine a quote, most comparable use, and to only compare the Bible camp to that use, and that use being a secular recreational camp, and did not address the other uses that were permitted.
Mr. Stozer, let me ask you just more fundamentally. There are two corporate entities, the city or the town and the county. Does the town have any final say in anything?
Absolutely, Your Honor. The town has argued throughout this litigation basically that it is an innocent bystander here. The fact is that it is really the town that has made the choice to exclude Bible camps here in the way that the regulatory power is exercised in Wisconsin and within the county. The zoning code could not be, the zoning code that the county adopted, that is, that regulates land use within the town as well, had to be consistent with the town's land use plan and with its comprehensive plan, which it adopted. Wisconsin law mandates that. It's not a choice. The town needed to adopt the zoning code. It did so. If it did not adopt it, then the zoning code would not be applicable to at least the non-shoreland areas of the town. But even the shoreland area zoning has to be consistent with the town's land use plan. Any rezoning that the county engages in has to be consistent with the town's land use plan, the town's comprehensive plan. And the town also has the ability, although it didn't happen in this case because rezoning was denied, but it can veto any rezoning. So does that answer your question, Your Honor?
Well, I guess, but the town can only act through the county. Isn't that what it amounts to?
No, the town acts by adopting its own plans. The county's actions must be consistent with those plans. If the town passes a comprehensive plan, which it has, and it has determined that, for example, the areas that we're talking about are to be single-family land uses, the county is not able to zone those parcels in a way that is inconsistent with that
plan.
Did
you have your hearing before the county or before the town?
We had the rezoning petition and the conditional use application were submitted to the county. Various county boards, the planning and
zoning. So all the county took the town's recommendations, incorporated it as a part of their plan, and that's where you went to try to get changes made.
Well, we're not challenging the town's recommendations. We're challenging the town's comprehensive plans, which are land use regulations, which the county's zoning and zoning actions must be consistent with. So in that respect, if the town had decided within its comprehensive plan that Bible camps were a good idea or as good as schools, community facilities, etc., all the other uses that are permitted in this zone, the county would have been able to grant a conditional use permit or to rezone property to allow the Bible camp. So again, the town had a very critical role in this entire process. And I would like to also point out for the court that RLUIPA, the language of RLUIPA reads that a government may not impose or implement a land use regulation. So we believe this is certainly a case where the county has been implementing the town's land use plans. Returning back to my equal terms argument, the in the River of Life case, this court had determined what the standard of review was. It was a court has to look at the accepted zoning criterion. It looked at the tests of other circuits, the Third Circuit and the Eleventh Circuit, and there are slight differences between these standards, but in this case, I don't believe it makes any difference. There's no dispute as to what the zoning criteria or zoning purposes are here. The county's witnesses have stated that it's what is stated in the purpose of the zoning code. Zoning code talks about in the single-family residential district, District 2, having a quiet neighborhood, infrequent traffic, and few people. Yet, in that same district, the zoning code allows schools, libraries, community buildings, museums, community living arrangements, government uses, playgrounds, etc.
When I read that, though, for a town of 700 people, you're not going to get too many of those types of activities, are you?
Well, I'm not sure that the practical considerations play into whether a religious applicant is treated on less than equal terms. All these uses can at least apply for a conditional use permit. Our use cannot apply for anything. It is banned outright. So whether or not a school would, as a practical matter, locate there, and there are schools in the area. I think one county over there's a boarding school. By the way, a boarding school is a use that would be permitted. The county admitted that schools include boarding schools. So to try to see what the difference related to the accepted zoning criteria are between a Bible camp and a boarding school, it seems difficult. The district court even admitted that the uses could have significant or greater impacts than the camp. I believe the county also admits in its own brief that these uses could have comparable impacts. The witnesses' testimony, the county's witnesses, admitted to significant impacts that could occur by the permitted uses. So again, this we think that the problem with respect to the equal terms claim stems simply from the wrong standard used by the lower court. It said, we only look at the most comparable use. The most comparable use to a Bible camp is a secular camp, and both are prohibited. Therefore, the summary judgment was granted against the plaintiffs. In the River of Life case, the court en banc talked about, you know, hypothetically comparing churches to movie theaters, libraries, community centers. In the De Grugillier case, the comparison was between churches and daycare centers, nursing homes, junior colleges. The Vision Church decision talked about neutrality between churches and libraries, museums, and schools. So the courts have not had a problem with comparing religious uses to other secular uses, not simply the most secular use. And unless the court has any further questions on the equal terms claim, I'd like to move ahead to the total exclusion claim, as I refer to it, the claim under 42 U.S.C. 2000 CC B3A, where recreational camps have been determined to be excluded from the entire jurisdiction of the town of Woodboro. And as we already discussed, the reason they were excluded is because Woodboro made the determination that such uses should not exist within its jurisdiction. It is clear that the town itself is a jurisdiction. Wisconsin law talks about towns as being a body, corporate and politic. It is a political or judicial subdivision, using the Black's definition. The RLUIPA itself uses the language that no government shall impose or implement a land use regulation that totally excludes religious assemblies from a jurisdiction. And we believe that the language that Congress used here is important. It didn't say the jurisdiction or its own jurisdiction, language that it did use in prior versions of the Act, the Religious Liberty Protection Act, versions that went to the House in 1998 and 1999. But it specifically changed that language in the version that passed to meaning a jurisdiction. So it is certainly consistent with the text to understand that a county may be able to exclude religious uses from another jurisdiction, that jurisdiction being the town, if it is determined that the town's own actions are irrelevant. We believe we don't even have to get to that point because it is the town that excluded the religious assembly use itself from its own jurisdiction.
Well, did I understand it correctly, or maybe I misread the briefs? The town is about 700 people. 35 square miles, though?
Yes, yeah. It's a sparsely populated, and this was a big issue for the town, and we really don't
understand. It's larger than Chicago.
Exactly, Your Honor. The idea is that somehow this use, which the district court's findings were, involved a use of 34 acres for a Bible camp that may have 250 to 300 students on this large parcel of land, which is adjacent to another large parcel of land owned by the Jairus family itself, would somehow take over or destroy the village, that it's not appropriate. I would posit, you know, where are you supposed to put a Bible camp? If not in an area like this, where there is a you know, great natural beauty, there's a large outdoor acreage there. The evidence demonstrates that there was no evidence that anybody would even see the facilities at this Bible camp from other neighboring properties. The Wisconsin DNR determined that this would not impact the natural beauty of the area, assuming that appropriate screening measures would have been taken, and so on. So in all of 36 square miles, the town cannot find one location where a Bible camp like this may be permitted, whereas churches, schools, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all have potential locations within that jurisdiction.
And I just want to clarify that, this correct factually, there are year-round recreational camps, both religious and secular, on approximately 36% of the land in Oneida County, and at least 15 recreational camps currently exist in the county. Is that right?
The most of the recreational camps are religious in nature. The idea of a Bible camp is something that's even recognized within Wisconsin law in its property taxation statutes. So that's just an interesting aside. But to say that it's permitted in locations where this will get into my substantial burden argument, Your Honor. But to say that such camps are nominally permitted in areas where it is impracticable for them to locate, all of the parties, for example, agree that a Bible camp or a secular recreation camp would needs to exist on a body of water. All of the other camps exist on bodies of water. The county's designee testified that recreational camps need to be on bodies of water. The plaintiffs themselves have specific beliefs here. They want to engage in baptism. They believe in the religious symbolism of being on this lake and even being on this specific property. There's evidence in the record that this particular property was unique to the plaintiffs, and the district court found that as well. It's also not in dispute at all that the plaintiffs' religious beliefs and intended religious exercise are completely religious, completely sincere. Sincerity was not put into dispute by the parties, I believe, here. And the district court found that they were sincere. So, yes, that leaves us with a few other properties. We introduced into the record an analysis of all of those properties, and here I'm getting into my substantial burden argument. But the idea of alternative properties is something that this court and other courts have held is a relevant factor in terms of a substantial burden claim. We start off with from the standpoint that a substantial burden claim is ordinarily an issue of fact, as the court held in the World Outreach Conference Center. Those facts, there are a number of facts that courts have determined are relevant in a substantial burden claim under subsection A of RLUIPA, because there are different contexts. Whether there's
one of those contexts has to do with, at least here, you know, there are seasonal recreational camps, both religious and secular, and they're allowed on 57% of the land in Woodboro. And churches are permitted on 42% of the land, campgrounds 57%, and religious shrines 59%. So really the only recreational camp not permitted is the year-round type. And so that's where I'm having trouble with your argument that it's a
Well, let me be clear about what our argument is. Our argument is that recreational camps are totally excluded from the town of Woodboro itself. That is a separate, independent jurisdiction. We're not arguing that recreational camps are nominally excluded from the entire county itself.
But I thought they were allowed on 57% of all the land in Woodboro.
Recreational camps are not allowed anywhere within the town of Woodboro. Seasonal recreational camps, which are summer camps, are allowed in certain places, not in the lakeshore areas or places where a summer camp would actually locate. But our use is not a summer camp. Our use is a camp. We have the plaintiffs tend to provide retreats, to provide spiritual gatherings, and so on throughout the year, not only for children.
That. Yeah, the whole question, though, is whether there's a total.
Right, right. And that is an important issue here. The fact is that the county treats seasonal camps different from recreational camps. In fact, seasonal camps are not allowed to exist where in the District 5 where recreational camps are allowed to exist. The county has determined it has created its own categories and then put our use within one category and regulated them differently and separately. So if there was a general category of camps that could be, the use could be conditioned through the conditional use process or what have you, where there could be normal, reasonable time, place, manner restrictions placed upon them, that would be an argument. But that's not what the county did. And the county said, we have determined there are two different uses. There are summer camps and there are year-round camps. And while summer camps are allowed in some areas, those areas probably significantly being DNR land or forest land within the town, there is no place where this particular use is permitted. It's not simply a time, place, manner restriction. Camps have to close down by 10 o'clock at night or what have you. It is a completely different use. Getting back to the other issue of alternative properties, when you look at how the county actually regulates these uses, it has determined that camps are not appropriate next to single-family zoned areas. They're not appropriate next to single-family uses if they exist there. They're not appropriate in areas where the town's land use plans have determined that they don't want the use. They're not appropriate, apparently, in properties that are zoned at least 34 acres, because they've decided that the plaintiff's property is too small for this. So when you take out all of the properties that don't meet the criteria that the town itself has determined or the county itself has determined are improper for a recreational camp, then you're really left with at most a handful of case alternative properties. And again, this gets to the general issue of what constitutes a substantial burden on religious exercise. Are there quick, reliable, and financially feasible alternatives that they can? Is there plenty of land or a paucity of other land under the Presbyterian Church case? The court in Saints Constantine and Helen held that it is not the standard that a church would have to show that there's no other parcel of land on which it can build, and that a burden would not be insuperable, which does not make it insubstantial. These are factual issues. We didn't argue here that we were entitled to summary judgment based on all of this evidence that we introduced. We're just arguing that evidence creates, it's more than a scintilla, it creates a genuine issue of material fact, and that this is a question that should have gone to the jury rather than the district court's decision, which throughout the opinion was based on a sort of general understanding that if a religious entity is allowed to have a church or a school, that it can't complain about not being able to engage in other religious exercise. It's been our argument throughout that it's not up to a local government, it's not up to a court to determine what religious exercise a plaintiff should engage in, but that's something that's left to the religious organization itself. RLUIPA talks about any religious exercise. It doesn't talk about any specific religious exercise. Your Honor, I see that my time is approaching here, so if the court has no further questions right now, I'll save the rest for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Jones?
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Andrew Jones, and I represent Oneida County and the Oneida County Board of Adjustment. The district court in this case.
How large is Oneida County, population-wise and size-wise?
Don't think the record indicates what the population of the county is. In terms of acres, it's 700,000 plus acres, Your Honor. It is a large county. I think it's fair to say, and I think the court could take judicial notice, that it is a relatively sparsely populated county. It is not Milwaukee County or Cook County. The district court properly granted summary judgment to the county, the Board of Adjustment, and the town of Woodboro. In this court, respectfully, we would contend should affirm. And I will focus, as Mr. Storzer did, on three particular claims: the equal terms claim under RLUIPA, the substantial burden claim, and the total exclusion claim. To start with the total exclusion claim, according to Division of Church, that provision of RLUIPA means that a local government cannot completely and totally exclude religious assemblies from a jurisdiction. As you pointed out, Judge Williams, here it is undisputed that in Oneida County, religious assemblies are allowed in vast areas of the county. This includes churches, religious schools, and other religious uses. This even includes religious recreational camps. Year-round camps are permitted on some 36% of all land in the county, and seasonal camps on some 72% of the land in the county. Religious assemblies, for that matter, are also permitted or allowed uses within the town of Woodboro. Again, this includes churches, religious schools, and seasonal recreational camps, which, as you pointed out, Your Honor, are allowed on 57% of all of the land in the town of Woodboro. To succeed on its total exclusion claim, Eagle Cove, or the appellees, need to establish two things. First, that the town, not Oneida County, is the appropriate jurisdiction to consider. And second, even assuming that is true, that the total exclusion provision is violated if any specific form, defined very specifically, any specific form of religious assembly, such as a year-round recreational camp, is not allowed in the town. And neither of those propositions is true under the law. As to the correct interpretation of the use of the phrase religious assemblies in the statute, on its face, RLUIPA, the total exclusion provision, refers to the total exclusion of religious assemblies, not a or any religious assembly. This contrasts with the substantial burden provision, which speaks to the religious exercise of a person, including a religious assembly or institution, singular. Also contrasts with the equal terms provision, which refers to a religious assembly or institution, and likewise to the non-discrimination provision.
If a city or town under Wisconsin law chose not to enact any zoning regulations or whatever, would the county go ahead then and zone it or treat that 36 square mile in some fashion?
There's two parts to that answer. If a particular town does not accept county zoning and doesn't otherwise enact its own zoning regulations, then for non-shoreland areas, that land will be unzoned. And there are portions of the county that are not zoned. Shoreland zoning, so lands within, I believe, 1,000 feet of a navigable waterway, like a lake, that is not subject to approval or disapproval of a town. So the county independently imposes zoning regulations, and that's mandatory for those areas.
So the county has exclusive jurisdiction for shoreline.
That is correct. And I think, you know, going to this, this moves off the religious assemblies and how you define that issue, but to the second issue, that is whether the town or the county is the appropriate jurisdiction to consider. And that goes to a question you asked of Mr. Storzer early on. It's this county zoning code that's at issue here. The decisions made to deny this particular camp were made under the zoning code, not under any other statute or ordinance. And it is the county that enacted, maintains, and implements the zoning code. And it doesn't do so under a delegation or grant of authority from the town. The county's zoning authority is derived directly from state law. It's given from the state to the county, not through the town. So it's an independent authority, and it's not exercising the town's authority. It's exercising its own authority when it enacts the zoning code and implements the zoning code. And the town, of course, here, Woodboro, approved the zoning code, but in doing so, again, it's not delegating an authority to the county. It's simply saying the county can exercise its authority, its zoning authority, within that jurisdiction. And here, in terms of the rezone petition and the conditional use permit application, whatever say the town had, those recommendations were advisory. They were not mandatory. And that's true on the face of the zoning code. That's true on the face of those recommendations themselves. So I think those points all lead to the conclusion that here it's the county as a whole, not the town, that's the appropriate jurisdiction to consider for purposes of the total exclusion claim. And the closest case that is available on point is a district court case from Texas, followed that reasoning. It looked to the jurisdiction being regulated as a whole, not one of its constituent parts, in determining in that case that the larger area, the area of the zoning code as a whole, which would here be the county, was the appropriate jurisdiction, and that's the Elijah Group from, I think, the Western District of Texas. To jump back to the definition of religious assemblies, again, it's stated in the plural, not the singular. And as this court noted in Vision Church, total exclusion provision is derived directly from Shad v. Mount Ephraim, the Supreme Court decision, which spoke to prohibitions of a quote-unquote wide range of expression or quote-unquote broad categories of protected expression, which in that case was live entertainment, which included various forms of entertainment. And so that is exactly what the total exclusion provision does. It prohibits the total exclusion of a broad category of protected expression, religious assemblies. And taken to not even its extreme, but taken to its logical place, Eagle Cove's argument essentially is that the total exclusion provision would require the county or any other local government in its place to allow every conceivable form of religious assembly in every single town within its borders. And that simply cannot be the law. That is an unreasonable interpretation of the statute. Oneida County would either have to allow every single zoning district, would have to allow all religious assemblies in every single zoning district within the county, or it would have to ensure that enough zoning districts were in every single town to ensure that every possible religious assembly could take place in every town within the county. That would destroy the purpose of local zoning, and it would essentially give religious assemblies a free pass from any sort of local land use control, at least in terms of the total exclusion provision. Turning to the substantial burden argument or claim, substantial burden is defined in CLUB as one that bears direct, primary, and fundamental responsibility for rendering religious exercise effectively impracticable. This Court's decisions have made several points clear under the standard. One, the fact that religious camps are not permitted as of right, that is, you need a permit to build one, in Oneida County, does not constitute a substantial burden. That's true under the CLUB decision. And the fact that the county does not allow recreational camps in every single zoning district in the county is also not a substantial burden. That's true under the Patriot decision. Multiple decisions of this court have held that where there is land available on which a religious organization can build, the fact that they're not permitted to build everywhere does not constitute and may have to find a suitable alternative site, does not constitute a substantial burden. This is true from CLUB, PETRA, and World Outreach, at least. Otherwise, as this court has noted, religious assemblies would essentially have immunity, an outright exemption from local land use controls. The undisputed facts show that there are sites that there is land available in Oneida County on which religious organizations can build. Again, the same data regarding the availability of land for religious uses that I cited on the total exclusion claim. There is a vast quantity of land in the county and even within the town where religious organizations can build, where something like a religious recreational camp is an allowed use. And more specifically, the county introduced evidence on summary judgment that there are numerous specific sites in the county where that are suitable for the proposed use proposed by Eagle Cove. The county's land use expert created a chart and a map, Exhibit 66 to the county's summary judgment submissions, showing just a sample of 10 suitable sites and a map showing the location of those sites and 10 additional potential suitable sites for a recreational camp. All 20 of those properties are already zoned for a recreational camp, are of sufficient size and with sufficient buildable area, are located on water, have sufficient road access, and are not developed or only minimally developed. According to the county's land use expert, these sites represent only a small portion of the potentially available sites in the county. And when Eagle Cove talks about a dispute of fact, potentially, as to the availability of land, that simply is not borne out by the facts in the record. Their complaints about these potential 20 alternative sites do not, in fact, create a material dispute. Eagle Cove complains that some of these alternative sites are located in towns where the land use plans would conflict with such a use. But by simple reference to Exhibit 66, it's clear that at least 7 of the 10 sample sites that are listed on the chart by the county's expert, that is not true. It is undisputed that it is not true. And this argument simply ignores the fact that these properties are zoned for this use. There has been a legislative determination by the county that these properties, that recreational camps are allowable uses on these properties, subject to potential conditions through the conditional use permit process. And that is in complete contrast to their application for the subject property. The subject property is not zoned for the use. These sites are. Eagle Cove also asserts that the sites are located next to land that's zoned for single-family residential use. But again, that is not true of all of the sites. At least 4 of the sites on the expert's chart, that is not true, and there's absolutely no evidence from Eagle Cove as to the other 10 charts that were listed on the map, and the other 10 alternative sites listed on the map. And again, that argument totally ignores the fact that these sites are specifically zoned for recreational uses, including recreational camps. Eagle Cove complains that some of these sites are too small. But it is undisputed that all of these sites are as big or bigger than the site that they want to construct this camp on and have substantially more buildable area than their subject site. Eagle Cove argues in an attempt to create an issue of fact that some of the lakes are too small. But again, referring to Exhibit 66, five of the first 10 sample sites, the lakes are all greater than 100 acres. And eight of those 10 sample sites, the lakes are all greater than 50 acres. There's simply no dispute that these are properties on water that could be used for various forms of recreation, including swimming and boating of some kind. And if the specific religious need for the camp to be on water is for baptisms, immersion baptisms to occur, and for religious symbolism, then the question of whether the county has imposed a substantial burden on Eagle Cove shouldn't really depend on whether these lakes are large enough to support water skiing or other such forms of intensive lake use. If the need is for baptisms and religious symbolisms, then why isn't a 100-acre lake sufficient for that purpose?
How does the property run into the lake? Do the landowners have does their property extend into the lake?
And for which sites or site are you referring?
In general, in Wisconsin, what's the property law with regard to the ownership of lake property?
Well, that's probably a bigger topic than I can tackle, but I would say that these sample sites that the county's expert identified, these 20 sites, these are all sites that have water frontage. So the owner of that land has riparian rights to use that water and to have direct access to that water. I mean, certainly there are limitations under Wisconsin law on what a riparian owner can do, but these are properties that are physically on the water.
But I guess it depends how far it extends into the lake.
I honestly don't have the answer to that question under Wisconsin law. I can say from personal experience, my father-in-law owns land on a lake in northern Wisconsin, and we can go out and swim. I suppose if we wanted to conduct a baptism in the water, I don't think that anything in Wisconsin law would prohibit us from doing that. And that's irregardless of the size of the lake. And I would also submit that Eagle Cove did an analysis just of the general land that is zoned recreational or general use, the two zoning districts that would support a recreational camp other than unzoned land. And that analysis is at Record Site 103, Exhibit 2. And great emphasis is placed on that in Eagle Cove's brief, the idea that they did an analysis and somehow were able to cross off every other single piece of land in the county that's zoned appropriately as an appropriate site for this use. But Eagle Cove's own analysis shows that there are in excess of 75 parcels of land in the county that are zoned for its use and that are on water. And the same flaws or criticisms that exist of its analysis of the county's experts' sample alternative sites apply to Eagle Cove's analysis of these other parcels. Basically, Eagle Cove is asking this court to conclude that its property and its property alone, which they didn't even buy for this purpose, its land that was purchased by the Jarles brothers' grandparents 60-plus years ago, that property is the only property, miraculously, in Oneida County that they are able to construct the site on. And that is simply not supported by the facts in the record. Eagle Cove did not argue this in its argument to the court this morning, but it certainly emphasized in its brief, sticking still on the substantial burden claim, that there was delay, uncertainty, and unnecessary expense here that does constitute substantial burden. Under the case law of this circuit, that is not the case. Not all delay, uncertainty, and expense equals a substantial burden. That's clear under Club. That's clear even under New Berlin. where the court noted that the municipality there had acted completely without any basis in law for its decisions, and that its actions were marked by evidence of bad faith and deliberate delay. And it's important to keep in mind that Eagle Cove applied for a conditional use permit on a piece of property that was not zoned for this use. And cases such as Petra and the Fourth Circuit's decision in Bethel World Outreach hold that such circumstances do not support a claim under the substantial burden provision based on delays or uncertainty that resulted from that kind of application. Eagle Cove was not misled by the county into filing a conditional use permit application. The county clearly told Eagle Cove in denying the rezone petition that its proposed use was not supported by the existing zoning on the land. I would refer this court to the June 13, 2006 staff report, Exhibit 32 in the county summary judgment submissions, and the zoning committee minutes from its June 14, 2006 meeting, Exhibit 31. The county board explicitly said that to Eagle Cove in denying its rezone petition. Moreover, Eagle Cove repeatedly represented to the county in this process that it knew full well that the county had told it it could not build its proposed use on this property under the existing zoning. Those repeated representations are referenced beginning at page 35 of the county's brief. And if Eagle Cove really, truly, sincerely had the belief that the county was inviting it to submit a conditional use permit application and that its camp could be constructed on the land, then Arthur Jarrus never would have said to the county board chair in a letter on August 11, 2006, that it is no answer to say that they might have a church when they want to practice their religion in the form of a Bible camp. Their attorney never would have said to the county board at the meeting that ultimately led to the denial of the rezone petition that his clients wanted to build a Bible camp, not a church or a school. Eagle Cove repeatedly represented to the county, those sites are clear in the county's brief, that it understood that the county had told it that it could not construct its camp on the land given the zoning. So its subsequent conditional use permit application and any delays that resulted from that are on Eagle Cove, not the county.
Mr. Jones, I'm sorry for interrupting you, but I wanted to ask you quickly about the Wisconsin state law claims, the constitutional claims, and the certiorari review. I'm curious why the judge dealt with the constitutional claims but not the certiorari claim. Wouldn't it have been better to decline jurisdiction on both of those?
Well, I think that certainly under 28 U.S.C. 1367, the judge obviously had the discretion to resolve both or one of those claims. I believe the judge in this instance resolved the constitutional claim because the case law in Wisconsin is clear that that claim or the analysis of that claim employs the same analysis as the judge had employed under the substantial burden claim under RLUIPA. That is, whether there is a substantial burden, and then if there is, whether there's a compelling state interest, and whether it was imposed in the least restrictive means. So the analysis he had already applied, he felt applied equally to that claim, and so he could resolve that claim without further analysis, and I think the judge is completely correct on that. My sense, well, he easily could have dealt with the certiorari claim, given the standard, but I think that he concluded that that was an analysis that he had not undertaken as a result of the federal claims, and as a result, he would leave that to a state court to decide. All right. Briefly, because I see my time is limited at this point, on the equal terms claim. River of Life establishes that it is enough to rebut an equal terms claim if religious and secular assembly uses are treated the same from the standpoint of an accepted zoning criterion, which the majority in River of Life characterized as a residential, commercial, or industrial zoning district. And in this case, we're dealing primarily, the majority of the land, and certainly the land on the lake, is covered by District 2 zoning, which is a residential, a single-family residential zoning district. And the assembly uses that are permitted in that district are all assembly uses, secular and religious, that are commonly associated with such a residential zoning district, and in fact serve the day-to-day assembly needs of people residing with that district, within that district. We're talking about churches, schools, libraries, museums, community buildings, parks, playgrounds. So those are all assembly uses that are consistent with and serve that residential zoning district. The assembly uses that are excluded are completely different in nature and completely in a different posture to that residential zoning district. And those assemblies, or at least as relevant to this case, that are excluded are recreational camps of any kind, so secular and religious. So I think on those facts, it is not possible to conclude that secular and religious assemblies that stand in the same position to this residential zoning district are treated differently. And under River of Life, I believe that that establishes that Eagle Cove's equal terms claim was properly subject to summary judgment. I see that the red light is on. I certainly would answer any other further questions.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Riesebaker.
Thank you, Your Honor. If it pleases the Court, I can start out by answering your question about lake beds. The Wisconsin State Constitution reserved, at the time of statehood, the beds of all rivers and the beds of all lakes and the Indian portages as the common property of the people of the state of Wisconsin to be held in perpetuity. So all lakes in Wisconsin are open to all people if you can access them, the exception being a lake that is entirely owned by one private property owner. And so to have any riparian access at all to a lake is to have the full use and enjoyment of the lake. You have certain rights as a riparian that only riparians have, which is to place a pier and to place rafts and other things that are associated with your shore estate. I want to focus initially on trying to respond to comments that the plaintiffs have made about the relationship between the town comprehensive plan and zoning, because I think they've seriously overstated the weight that is actually afforded to a town comprehensive plan. If you go to the state statute involved, Wisconsin adopted a comprehensive planning statute 13 years ago, section 66.1001 of the Wisconsin statutes. In subparagraph 3 of that statute, it provides that a jurisdiction shall take certain actions consistently with its comprehensive plan, and I emphasize that. You look at the statute, and it will be clear that in acting on zoning changes, Oneida County relies on its comprehensive plan, not the town of Woodboro's comprehensive plan. Subsection J and Q are the operative subsections that refer to zoning and shoreline floodplain zoning. Now, so what role does the town's comprehensive plan play? Well, it serves two purposes. First of all, it provides guidance to land use applicants, such as the plaintiffs, informing them of what the community's goals are for the vision the people of the town have for their future. Secondly, it governs those decisions that the town actually does make. Now, those are limited because the town has elected to be subject to the county zoning ordinance. I refer you to the point in my brief where I cite Jefferson County versus Timmel, quite a long-standing case, but it remains the law in Wisconsin that towns, once they have elected to go into the county zoning ordinance, cannot rescind that approval because the Supreme Court of Wisconsin said it is a county ordinance, and the only issue for the town is whether they wish to be covered by it or not, which takes us to really what the
So you give up any right to have, if the county doesn't decide cases the way you think they ought to under what you recommended, what is your recourse, or do you have?
Well, you can't withdraw from county zoning, something that's been brought up into the legislature many times. The only authority towns have is advisory. Now, just to, as an aside, the reason why town zoning and county zoning was written this way is that the whole structure was established before one person, one vote. And at that time in Wisconsin, county boards were apportioned anything but one person, one vote. Every town board member was on the county board. So in Oneida County, the towns all sent three members to the county board, while meanwhile the city of Rhinelander sent its mayor and one of its councilors. There wasn't a problem with towns getting what they wanted back then. The statutes haven't caught up to that reality. But the point is, the towns don't have a way of forcing the county to do what they want. If the town wanted to force Oneida County to rezone this property as a year-round Bible camp, the town has no way to force it. The town's only authority is to veto inconsistent changes that it doesn't like. I see I'm running out of time, and I want to make one final point, and that is that fundamentally this case is about land use. Now, our LUPA isn't intended to supplant land use planning. It's meant to structure land use planning and to assure that religion is treated fairly. But this is a case where the plaintiffs simply bit off a lot more than the town of Woodboro could chew. We're talking about asking a community of some 750 people in 36 square miles that has no local services to take on a seasonal population that would bring thousands of people in and out over this course of the summer. It would increase its population by 50% while it's operating. Making a reasonable decision that isn't consistent with the community, it has nothing to do with religion. It has to do with the character of the kind of a community we want. Thank you.
How much time? Yeah, 5 minutes.
A few final points. The county talked, with respect to the equal terms claim, talked about the zoning criterion called uses that serve the residential district. That is not, that is a ad hoc justification here, suggesting that somehow the zoning code or the zoning officials determine that only those uses that will serve the local population is the criteria to judge here. That's not what the ordinance says. The ordinance has a purpose statement. It talks about few people and infrequent traffic. And that's why the uses that are permitted there's at least a genuine issue of material fact as to whether the uses that are permitted are substantially similar to a Bible camp. With respect to the exclusion claim, the county proposes a standard that would allow any jurisdiction to ban all religious assemblies save one. So, for example, one of the uses that's permitted in the county is a religious shrine. If the county permitted religious shrines in its jurisdiction, even if it supposedly permitted it in one town within its jurisdiction, then it could ban churches, it could ban private religious schools, and so forth altogether. That is not in keeping with the broad construction provision of RLUIPA, which states that it should be interpreted in favor of a broad protection of religious exercise and not the narrowest protection of religious exercise. As was stated, that provision is descends from the Supreme Court's Shad decision. In that case did not involve the exclusion of all speech, like the county would suggest. The exclusion clause refers to the exclusion of all religious assemblies. It only involved the exclusion of one subset of speech, that of live entertainment. The Vision Church decision from this court talks specifically about the expressive conduct at issue. Here, the conduct at issue is Bible camp, which falls within the county's definition of recreational camp. We don't propose a standard whereby any single conceivable religious exercise must be permitted somewhere within a jurisdiction, but rather where the county divides up the religious assemblies and creates categories within which they fall, then yes, we do believe that they have to be permitted somewhere within a jurisdiction. The Elijah case from the Fifth Circuit district court decision, that was not a case that involved other jurisdictions Like here, the county has other jurisdictions that exist within it. And finally, on this substantial burden claim, the county went through a description of the various sites that were proposed by its witness, its expert, and went through a factual analysis, talked about how the plaintiff's facts that were offered in response could be contradicted. And this is exactly the type of factual analysis that's not proper on summary judgment. If it is the case that the county said that it can't allow camps next to single-family residential. They admitted this in deposition. So many of these offered locations were located next to single-family residential. The county code says that a conditional use permit, the same standards that are used for an administrative permit for recreational camps, must be consistent with the town's land use plan. So if there is a alternative property that is located in an area where the town's land use plan says no Bible camps or no recreational camps, a permit has to be denied by the county. And with respect to the bad faith issue, the county told the plaintiffs first, you have to seek rezoning. They sought rezoning. They said, you don't need rezoning. You can get what you want under current zoning. When asked, what did you mean by what your objectives were, the county admitted, we understood your objectives to be a Bible camp. So we applied for a conditional use permit, spent years and years, hundreds of thousands of dollars seeking that. Issues of intent and who believed what, again, these are not the kinds of issues that are appropriately resolved on summary judgment. The plaintiff in the letter referred to the chairman was referring to the chairman's own statements himself and not the entire county or the entire board. This is all laid out in Archeros' declaration. And finally, I'd like to point out that unlike the club case or the Petra case, this is a situation where our use is permitted nowhere by right within the county. Within the entire jurisdiction, the county cannot point to a single location where our use would be suitable. So thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement. The court will take a short break before taking up case number 2. Now, the second case this morning is Malowski versus the City of Des Plaines.
Morning.